Interview John Lennon and Yoko Ono, London, June 1969.
John, what do you and Yoko hope to achieve together? Because you seem to be concentrating an awful lot of effort these days on LPs together and on your own things together.
Yeah. We hope to achieve peace, really. You know, that's what we're aiming at, and it's a big achievement, and we're just doing our best for it. You know?
Do you feel your week in Amsterdam, lying in bed, has achieved anything? Have you had any encouraging results?
Yeah, there was a lot. First of all, we made people laugh, and that's good. You know, I mean, John and Yoko are like the wind. You can't see it, but when it passes, the trees bend. You know, and that's what we do. And they had a lot of results, apart from us getting a nice film out of it, and probably an album. A lot of people wrote to us and sent word, and people from the States, all around the world. And just instances like some guy wrote and said, now, because of your event in Amsterdam, I'm not joining the RAF, and I'm growing my hair. Now, all we were saying there, symbolically, instead of kicking a shop window in, say, do something like grow your hair for peace. Like even the guy in the factory who's grown, won't cut his hair, he's doing it for peace, whether he knows it or not. You know, he's protesting without... They have no moral or... And no reason can they get him for having long hair, you know, about going in the cake and all that. You know, he can tie his hair up for work, etc., etc. So we say, grow your hair for peace and stay in bed for peace. You know, do something like that that can't be got, can't be smashed.
But do you feel that growing your hair and sort of lying in bed is a positive enough reaction? Don't you think it would be better if people went out and did something more positive?
That is a positive thing.
Very positive. I mean, the fact that it stimulated other people to say that, like you said that, you know, this is the result of us doing it, you know, in other words, well, all right, let's do something positive for the peace, you know. Okay, so we started that, you see.
So you go out and do it. If we've inspired you to do something positive, we say we've done something positive, you know, you say, well, I can do better than that. Do it. That's the point. Anybody who's got an idea, top us, you know, and we'll keep the game going and we'll try and top you, but we all want the
peace competition for you, you know. That's what it is, like saying, well, all right, so they weren't doing so well. Well, we can do better and better and better, you know, it goes better.
A lot of people also feel that if everyone goes to bed and stays in bed for a week or a few days for peace, as a protest for peace, that the whole country will come to a standstill.
Well, wouldn't it be better than producing arms and bombs? Imagine if the American army stayed in bed for a week and the Vietnamese army, or Nixon and Kosygin and Chairman Mao. Imagine it if the whole world stayed in bed. There'd be peace for a week and they might get to feel what it was like. The tension would be released.
If there was enough trouble and there was obviously going to be a war and you asked to fight, John, would you fight? Your country?
I wouldn't attack, no. I'd defend myself, probably, in a situation. But I wouldn't attack, you know. I'm a pacifist. No.
What do you want out of life most of all now, John?
Peace, you know. Really, that's all I want.
If anything happened to you, how would you like people to remember you?
As the great peacenicks.
That before your music?
Oh, sure, you know.
John, if you had your time over again, would you like it to work out like it has today? Would you like to be exactly what you are today? In other words, would you like to be John Lennon, Beatle?
Yes, I don't regret a thing, you know, especially since meeting Yoko. You know, that's made everything worthwhile, and that's the end of it, you know.
What especially attracted you to Yoko?
Well, she's me in drag.
Yeah, I'm amazed too, you know. I mean, I'm very amazed to meet somebody like John, who's like a kind of replica of me, and at the same time a little bit extra something, you know. And it's very beautiful, I mean. And the thing was, I was doing things alone, you know, and my main big problem was loneliness, you know. I mean, a lonely fight, really. And now we're together and we're doing it together, so it's easier. And I'm really very thankful. It's really the best luck I had, you know, in my life, so to speak, I think, in that sense. Yeah.
John, you seem a lot more relaxed in yourself now. What has happened? What do you put this down to? Because before you were always a little bit frightening.
Yes, yeah. I put it down to Yoko, you know. She's brought out the real me, you know. And I get nervous and tense like anybody else, but I'm more relaxed than I ever was, you know, since I was a child, you know.
So you would say you're going through the happiest period at the moment. You were a few years ago looking for happiness. You feel that you found it?
Yes.
Do you feel that what you did previously, going to India and things like that, were of any help?
Yes, that's what I mean. I don't regret anything. Meditation, I still believe in, and occasionally I use it. And I don't regret any of that. I don't regret taking drugs because they help me. I don't advocate them for everybody because I don't think I should, you know. But for me, it was good, and India was good for me. And I met Yoko just before I went to India and had a lot of time to think and think things out there with 3 months just meditating and thinking. And I came home and fell in love with Yoko, and that was the end of it. You know? And it's beautiful.
And what is your attitude to drugs now since the charge? Do you still take drugs?
I don't possess drugs, you know. I don't really bother with them much at all these days, actually. You know, but if somebody offered me some at a party, I wouldn't. It'd depend how I felt, the same as if they offer me whiskey now. I don't drink either. But depending on the situation, I might take pot, you know. But I would never carry it again. A, because I don't want to go through that. B, because I don't really want it, you know. The stuff was stuff that I'd had previously. I'd already dropped it in India, you know, and I'd taken it occasionally. I take a drink occasionally at that bit.
These days you're sort of high on just nothing, you know. Love. Just high, yes, high on love and air, and you're just being together, you know. And we're so high all the time, so it's no point in taking anything, really.
No.
George said that he thought the British were against the Beatles. Do you agree with this, John? Do you feel an anti-attitude towards you at the moment, which you haven't experienced before in your career?
Oh, we've experienced it before. We've always been treated the same. The Beatles are treated like the Britain's children, you know, and it's okay for the family to insult us. But you try see what happens if abroad starts insulting us. The British will stick up for us, and it's just like a family. And it's all right for them to slap our face, but you, if the neighbour does it, you watch out, you know, and it's always been like that. And George was very depressed, and it is depressing when the whole family's picking on you, you know. Whether it's because you did something wrong, I don't believe in hitting the child, you know. But I think he was depressed, and we do get hurt, because Britain appreciates us least, you know. But we can't help that. But at least we can live here in peace, you know, really.
You said you don't believe in hitting a child.
I don't believe in hitting him to correct him. I don't believe in corporal punishment is the answer. I can understand people thinking it's the only way to deal with them, because I understand those people. I don't think they're right, because it doesn't help murderers to hang them or help violent people to be violent to them. It is all they understand, but it doesn't. I don't believe violence begets violence, you know. And you can't kill off all the violent people or all the murderers, or you'd have to kill off the government.
Do you take everything you do seriously?
Seriously, or with a pinch of salt, you know. I don't take it too seriously, because I think that's the trouble with art quotes, music quotes, the peace movement quotes, and the world quotes. You know, so I take everything with a pinch of salt. But I take life seriously, you know, the serious job of being happy.
But the only thing that disturbs me a little bit is that a lot of people are jeering, aren't they, and making fun.
But they do. If anybody takes a stand, you're
not taking you seriously.
But that's...
That is good. That's part of our policy, is not to be taken seriously, because I think our opposition, whoever they may be, in all their manifest forms, don't know how to handle humour, you know, and we are humorists. What are they? Laurel and Hardy, that's John and Yoko. And we stand a better chance under that guise, because all the serious people like Martin Luther King and Kennedy and Gandhi got shot.
Yes, that's a very interesting point. So you don't mind being the court jesters, John?
No, we're willing to be the world's clowns.
Yes.
John, on one broadcast to France, you said that you were God. Were you serious about that? Do you really feel you are God?
We're all God, you know. I mean, Christ said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. And that's what it means, you know. And the Indians say that, and the Zen people say that. It's a basic thing of religion. We're all God. I'm not a God or the God, not the God. But we are all God, and we're all potentially divine and potentially evil. We all have everything within us. And the kingdom of heaven is nigh and within us, you know. And if you look hard enough, you see it.
You then believe in life after death?
I do. Without any doubt, I believe in it, you know.
Have you had any special experiences that make you believe so convincingly?
In meditation, on drugs, on diets. I've been aware of a soul and been aware of the power. Somebody asked a witch on TV, are you a black witch or a white witch? And she said, there's no such thing. There is a power which people tap and they use it for whatever ends they use it. A God is a power which we're all capable of tapping. We're all light bulbs that can tap the electricity. You can use electricity to kill people or to light the room, you know. And God is that, neither one nor the other, but everything. And we use him to our best ability, and it's no good blaming God for war, because you can use the H-bomb for cheap power throughout the world, or you can use it for a bomb, you know, the H-power, whatever it is, atomic power. And that's, God is that. You know.
What does life mean to you, John? Would it matter to you if it finished tomorrow, or do you want to live to an old age?
I'd like to live to a ripe old age, with Yoko only, you know. And I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I'd feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Do you ever go to church?
No, I don't need to go to church because I respect churches because of the sacredness that's been put on them over the years by people who do believe. I think a lot of bad things have happened in the name of the church, in the name of Christ, and therefore I shy away from church and as Donovan once said, I go to my own church in my own temple once a day, you know. And I think people who need a church should go, and the others who know the church is in your own head should visit that temple.
You have got this image of wanting to go back and perform again, John. People think you want to go back and play the guitar again and perform. Would you like to see the Beatles?
I'd think about it, yeah. You know, performing as a Beatle is a harder problem than performing as John Lennon and Yoko or the Plastic Ono Band, because you don't have that big aura around you. Whatever happens, we're going to get knocked. They're going to say it wasn't as good as, it's not. Whatever happens, we have such a thing to live up to, that to do a live performance as the Beatles takes a lot of consideration, you know. So I'd think about it.
Why don't you have an imaginary event, you know, because the imagination probably exceeds all events.
But is it completely out of the question?
No, it's not out of the question. It's just a big responsibility, you know. There's such a mystique about the Beatles that they'll be expecting God to perform, you know. And we're not.
Perhaps it'd be better to keep the mystique.
It could be, you know. Maybe Elvis did the best thing, was wait a long time. You know, then they're that pleased to see you on. They don't care what you do.
What would you like to see happen for the Beatles in the future, John?
I'd like them to see them get the money they've earned, which they haven't had yet. But our good friend Mr. Klein will see to that. Mm-hmm. And for them to be happy, you know, to do whatever they want to do. Because whatever happens to the Beatles, so-called, we'll always be sort of friends, you know. So all I want for the Beatles is their individual happiness, and whether that's in a collective form or not remains to be seen.
A lot of people have said, you know, how the image of the Beatles is so different to the day, the way you look and the way you dress and everything. Obviously, this is one way of growing up.
Yes.
But they find it, I think, perhaps odd that so much has happened to you, you know, in the way you project yourselves and the way you do look, you know, long hair and so different to how you used to be.
But what
are you
they
unhappy
want?
About?
When
this?
The Beatles first came out, we didn't look like anybody else. When our long hair then was considered long, our manager then, Brian, we always had it trimmed quite short, you know. He and Paul used to always be at me to cut my hair. And because, but we were considered long hair then. And so we're only considered as much freaky now as we were then. We're just longer hair than every you've got a Beatle haircut that we had in 1960. Most TV announcers have got it. Most bank clerks have got a short-haired Beatle haircut. But 5 years ago, it was considered outrageous. Mm. Now it isn't. Now
accepted.
Our length of hair is considered outrageous. We're only relatively the same. It's just people...
You started to grow earlier.
Yes, I mean, you know, people said exactly the same about us then. You know.
So people shouldn't be deceived by the freaky
It's like
look,
you don't judge
they?
A book by the cover, you know.
Yeah.
And that's all I can say. You can't judge people by their appearance. You know. It doesn't work. I've tried it, you know. I have a hard time being not prejudiced against very short-haired accountants and that, and thinking that or businessmen that they can't possibly be human because they haven't got long hair and fight for peace. You know, some of my best friends are short-haired. You know, it's like that. Would I let my daughter marry a short-haired man? You know, I would. Yes.
Are you, in fact, going your own way with Yoko these days? Because that is the impression one has.
Well, each Beatle's going, doing his own thing at the moment, you know, and it's like, it could be a rebirth or a death, you know, and we'll see what it is, you know, but it'll probably be a rebirth, you know, for all of us.
When do you, in fact, plan to record with the Beatles again?
At the moment, there is no plan whatsoever, you know, and maybe if one of us starts it off, the others will all come round and make an album, you know. It's just like that at the moment, to open the Beatles up, you know.
It's the first time this situation has ever arisen, isn't it?
Well, let's say before Sgt. Pepper there was 9 months of nothing. So in between our albums now, there's a lot of stuff going on, that's all. There might be 9 months or a year before we decide that we're interested enough to produce that thing called the Beatles album. You know, but there was 9 months before Sgt. Pepper, and it's only been since September, since we worked together.
Yes. Do you care about making another one?
Yeah, I think the Beatles is a good communication media, you know, and I wouldn't destroy it out of hand or dissolve it out of hand, you know. So that's what I think about Beatles. You know.
The main reason I asked you that, John, is because there have been so many rumours going around about, you know, Beatles having had rows and there being friction, that you're not talking to Paul and Paul's not talking to you.
Well, I wrote him.
The end of the Beatles.
I wrote all the Beatles about 20 postcards from Denmark to keep in touch with them. I didn't talk on the. I think I talked to George on the phone only about some business or something.
That's enough.
I was on holiday. I just sent them love, you know, through postcards, and we communicate like that, you know, when we're not actually physically together.
Why do you think rumours like this start?
Because there was a lot of tension around the Alan Klein coming in days and all that, you know, and the ATV thing going on, you know. The Beatles were under a lot of pressure, and we had to be together all the time, fighting and arguing and listening to all these different business things. That business thing was like a heavy tour, you know. In it, we made Get Back and Abbey Road and a couple of singles, and under a great strain, you know, of doing that business. And so now we're just taking a break from each other, you know.
John, it strikes a lot of people that you take up a cause because you believe in the cause, but how much investigation do you make about people that you try to help
I investigate
beforehand?
Thoroughly by spending hours with them, you know, like Michael from the Black House, you know, who I didn't know anything about till he approached me, until we met. And I talked and talked and talked with him, and he told me his position as it regards to violence and non-violence and the black movement, and how he has as many enemies in the black movement as he does from the white because of his peaceful stand. And with the Hanratties, we spent many hours with the parents and the lawyers and witnesses that they produced to convince us that there was a miscarriage of justice or a shadow of a doubt is what we're standing on. Mm. And, of course, the best investigation is to meet the people. You know, I'm just not a reader. But I like to judge people by how they are, you know. Mm. And I'm convinced of the sincerity of Michael X and the Hanratties.
Do you ever go further, say, into the background of people, rather than taking people on face value?
I often sort of suss people out round the back, yes.
No, I asked you about this, especially about this investigation thing about people's characters, was because the day I wrote about the fact that you were going to try and help the parents of Hanratty, somebody telephoned me and said, you know, John Lennon wants to watch what he's getting up to, and so do you. Me.
Yeah, that's true.
Because a threat, you know, because... saying that it was a very unsavoury subject, and I think,
but there
you
people
seem to have got involved with a lot of subjects that
because
some
anything
might
that gets down to the
unsavoury,
anything that gets down to the nitty gritty becomes unsavoury for some people, like whoever is responsible for the Hanratty miscarriage of justice, and all the other people involved will find it very unsavoury. You know, and that's all it is. Like they find nudity very unsavoury. They found long hair very unsavoury at one time, and they will continue to find things unsavoury for the rest of the million years we're all going to be together.
Lennon and Yoko Ono, New York, 1971.
It just shows you then, with all the money one can earn, that doesn't bring security of mind, does it?
Well, see, we earned millions and millions of money, but I must tell you that the Beatles got very little of it. We've all got houses, but it's usually we've managed to pay for them finally now after all these years.
Yes.
And that really only happened since Klein came in, the so-called wolf. And there's millions earned, but we never got it, you know.
Well, who got it then, John?
Well, you know, there's lots of big companies in London with various names. You just have to check them out and their connection with the Beatles, and you see where the money's gone.
Everybody.
And in America, too. Everybody connected with us is millionaires, except for the Beatles.
You're not
they used to tell Paul and I we are millionaires. We never have been. I might possibly be coming up to it shortly, you know, if we get lucky. But it's true, you know, we didn't get the money.
And you certainly aren't a millionaire. You never have been a millionaire.
No.
Not George, Ringo.
No, George and Ringo were practically penniless. Yoko now has got more money than they had when Klein came in. Yes. And that's in 2 years, you know. And we were working 10 years, and the money was
just... the wrong contract, you know.
You know, Brian was a beautiful guy, Brian Epstein, and he was an intuitive, theatrical guy, and he knew we had something, and he presented us well. But he had lousy business advice, not to say that somebody was crooking in particularly, but he got lousy advice.
Taking advantage of.
Brian included, you know, and none of us got it. So, I mean, that's life. I mean, you know, it's no big news that some artist or some kids in showbiz got robbed, right? It's the same old story. The attitude is, if they have money, they won't work.
Yes.
That's the old adage in show business.
Yes.
If you give the kids money or the star or whoever he is money, he won't work. That's not true. If you give an artist money, he's secure and he can work. It's the worrying about money and whether he's going to have to... my big worry always was, am I going to be Mickey Rooney I know we've earned it, but where's it gone? I've got to pay the tax someday.
Yes.
It's no good me saying, well, I never got it. The books say that it came to the Beatles, you know, or something like that, and we're going to have to pay tax the rest of our lives. That was my big worry. So it's no big news, though. We were robbed, so, you know, it's old hat stuff. I just warn any kids coming in the business, don't sign anything.
Right.
Unless the lawyer's your brother.
Yeah,
right.
You know, keep it in the family.
You mentioned that there's been a divorce. Do you think there's going to be a reconciliation of the group ever?
I can't see. There's no reason why we should ever play together. I mean, listen to the music. Would George have ever flourished like that if we carried on with the group?
No chance. There was no room.
I thought he was working on a solo album.
Well, I suppose we could have worked together. And no, he wasn't. He wasn't. He worked on the solo album after the split.
You don't think you would have had the chance to have done
both? If people need the Beatles so much, all they have to do is to buy each album and make a track out of it, and make it, put it on tape, track by track, one of me, one of Paul, one of George, one of Ringo. If they really need it that much, because otherwise the music is just the same, only on separate albums. Instead of having the White Album or Abbey Road where I sing a song, George sings a song, Paul sings a song, Ringo sings a song, wom, 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 like that, we make an album each. That's the only difference. And it's far better music because we're not suppressed. In the Beatles, by the time the Beatles were at their peak, we were cutting each other down to size. We were limiting our capacity to write and perform by having to fit it into some kind of format. And that's why it caused trouble. You know?
But you don't ever see...
I mean, for me personally, when you listen to the Stones music, nothing's ever happened. It's the same old stuff goes on and on and on forever. I've never heard anything different from them. So I think it'd be a good scene if they broke up and made some individual music, because it's the same old rehash of the same stuff over and over again.
Well, I ask you this because every time I...
Nothing personal, Mick. You know I love you and Keith, but, you know, I mean, I think it'd do them good to split up.
I ask you this because every time Beatles come up in a conversation, people say, do you think they'll play together again? You know, it's the thing that...
Well, I couldn't say no categorically on the Bible and on grapefruit, I swear. Get grapefruit in. I swear we'd never play together again under any circumstances whatsoever. I've no idea. But personally, I don't see any reason to form that group again. Paul has his new band. I have a new band. No doubt George will have a band and Ringo will have a band. I mean, that's why I brought out the Plastic Ono Band originally, to differentiate. That's me. That's my band, you know. It might be non-existent and it might vary every time you see us, but that's what I'm playing with. That's
and
what I am.
And freer now, I think.
Yes. You're obviously friends again. I mean,
well, we're not fighting too much. It's silly, and I always remember watching the film with, who was it? Not Rodgers and Hammerstein, those British people that wrote those silly operas years ago. Who are they?
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, Gilbert and Sullivan. I always remember watching the film with Robert Morley in, you know, thinking, we'll never get to that. You know, and we did, which really upset me, but I really never thought we'd be so stupid, but we did.
What, like splitting, like they
like
did,
splitting and arguing, you know, and then they come back and one's in a wheelchair 20 years later, you know, all that. I never thought we'd come to that because I didn't think we were that stupid, but we were naive enough to let people come between us, and that's what happened, you know. But it was happening anyway. I don't mean Yoko, I mean businessmen, you know.
What,
all of them.
Do you think businessmen were responsible?
Well, no, it's like anything. Well, when people would decide to get a divorce, you know, quite often you decide amicably, but when you get your lawyers and they say don't talk to the other party unless there's a lawyer present, then that's when the drift really starts happening. And then when you can't speak to each other without a lawyer, then there's no communication. And it's really lawyers that make divorces nasty. You know, if there was a nice ceremony like getting married for divorce, it would be much better, even divorce of business partners, because it wouldn't be so nasty. But it always gets nasty because you're never allowed to speak your own mind. You have to talk in double Dutch. You have to spend all your time with a lawyer, and you get frustrated, and you end up saying and doing things you wouldn't really do under normal